Well, I'd like to say Happy Mother's Day. Appreciate each one of the mothers here. Young ladies gonna have a lot of opportunity in the future to be a mother. I think, I hope. I'd like for us to open our Bibles to the third chapter of Genesis. And notice a verse here. In 3 and 20 of Genesis, I believe. It says, and Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living. Have you ever wondered how Adam came up with all the names for the animals? And where would he come up with a name like Eve? The way it's written there certainly implies that he already knew what the word meant. Or did the definition come after he gave her the name? I don't know. But, you know, Adam, the only other one in the history of mankind that possibly could have a similar experience is that Adam never was a child. Adam never was an adolescent. Adam never was a teenager. He was an adult. God made him an adult. And not only was he an adult, I believe that he was a very capable, intelligent adult. He was made in God's image. That's what it says. And he was able to communicate. He had a vocabulary. Our scientists in the last, 100 years or so has tried, maybe a little 150 years, has tried to cause us to think that mankind has come from grunting and pointing and stooping and being they have felt like that intelligence has increased. Well, if it was, why do people do so many foolish things today? You would think that everybody would be smart enough. In the last 150 years, people would have got smarter. Instead, it seems like they've got less smart. And they're doing some very foolish things. But anyway, just thinking about the name Adam chose, we could get into a philosophical debate and argument about, well, Moses is the one that recorded all of this, and he's looking back many generations after this, and we all know that the reason that Eve's name meant the mother of all living is because that was the name he gave her, but the definition came later. And I don't want to get into that debate. I just know that Adam was plenty capable of understanding what the word Eve meant. And however you say it in another language, I don't know. However you would say it in another tongue, I believe the essence, the meaning behind the name is the same. So it says here he called her Eve because she was the mother of all living. It's quite a call to be a mother. It's quite a opportunity and a rewarding experience. There are those that have that are biological mothers, and there are those that are acting mothers. Maybe they never had the home, had the child in the home. Sometimes there's been adoptions that's happened because children have been, their biological mother was disconnected from them for various reasons, whether it was death or by choice or whatever. But there is something about the way God created woman that wants to be a mother. It might be making special days for children. It might be having a special interest in the children's lives. It might be looking on with compassion at other people. But there is something God created in a woman to want to fill that role of a mother. And Adam here said, I'll call my wife Eve because she's the mother of all the living, the first woman. So I'd like to turn to Galatians, the fourth chapter now. And I want to try to set the stage for the thought this morning. And my thought is going to be probably the complexity of being a mother. I'd like to turn to Galatians chapter 4. And notice verse 26. Maybe we'll read a little bit above this. Verse 22 beginning, it says, "For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Which things are an allegory, for these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Agar. And this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children." He's not only talking about the Old Testament, but he's talking about literal Jerusalem here being in bondage to the Roman rule, I believe. But he goes on to say, the Apostle Paul says this, but Jerusalem which is above is free, which is the mother of us all. So one of, I think you all are well aware of this by now, but one of the burdens I have as a minister is that you could see, really see, how that spiritual Jerusalem is a mother to all children of God. It's the one that nurtures. It's the one that cares for. It's the one that has the. It's the one with the. It's the entity with the mother instinct. We said briefly before how God has designed the woman to have a level of compassion that many times men are oblivious to. Little scenario come up this weekend where one of my daughter-in-laws was made the comment about a father that we're all acquainted with, and how that he cleaned up one of his children after they had gotten made a mess of things, and she just said she would have a real problem. The little boy was like a year old or less or something like that, and the way he went about cleaning them up, she just said, I just have a real problem with that. Well, I'm going to tell you that a father in a man's brain, when it looks at that situation, is just completely different than a woman's brain. All right? And it's because God made it that way. And so I want us to realize that the spiritual Jerusalem, the church, is something that has There is something about it. God designed it to have that nurturing, caring, compassionate desire to help. And, you know, judgment is with the Father, by and large. Judgment is the thing. The Father ultimately needs to be the one that says, uh-uh, that don't work here. And the mother can say, well, he's just a little child. But the daddy says, he's going to be a big guy someday. You know, he's got to learn sometime, and I think today is the day. You know, that's the dad's mind. And the mother says, he's only a year old. He's only 2 years old. He's only whatever the age is. The mother says, but, and the daddy says, it's time. Do you see the difference here? So Paul said, just like Adam said, Eve, I'm going to name my wife Eve because she's the mother of all living, naturally speaking. And Paul says, Jerusalem, which is above, is free. Now we have today an International Space Station. I learned something else this weekend. You find out how little I know sometimes. That I just had it in my head that this International Space Station was out there in an orbit like the moon or something. You know, it was way out there. Oh no, they've told me, they clued me in. It's just barely in the outer atmosphere of the Earth. It's still a long ways between it and the moon. It's kind of up there in the, just kind of floating in thin air of what it's doing. But anyway, it's just barely out of the reach of gravity, okay? If it was any lower, it would fall and hit the Earth. But it's out there where it can rotate around. But anyway, Jerusalem, there's no Jerusalem out there with the space station. And that's not the space station's name. It's not Jerusalem. But the Jerusalem which is from above is a spiritual Jerusalem. And it's the what? It's the mother of us all. All of us spiritual children, it's the mother of us. Just like Eve is somewhere down the family tree is my mother. And she's your mother too, naturally speaking. And it wouldn't matter what ethnic background or what nation we come from, all of us can point back and say, Eve is my mother. And all of us should be able to point to the spiritual Jerusalem that's from above as my mother, my spiritual mother. And I wonder sometimes, can I ever say it good enough where everyone else can see that it's a spiritual church? It's a mother to us all. I feel real fortunate to have had a good mother, a wonderful mother. I believe it's helped me have a vision of the spiritual mother and church. My mother was human, and she had shortcomings, just like all humans do, that I was aware of when I was young, and I'm aware of them now. I want us to not only see the spiritual mother, but I want us to see our place. You know, we talked about last Sunday about us being members fitly joined together in that wheel within a wheel. And I want us to see not only the spiritual mother and us being totally disconnected from it, but I want us to see it's my mother, but I'm part of that. I'm part of that spiritual church. And I'm the tangible part that people can connect with. It's just like little children. There's something about, you know, little girls can be mean and all of that, but and they can have a little tantrum, temper tantrum. I said that all backwards, but they can do things that needs correction too. You know, the deal of little girls made out of sugar and spice and everything nice. Well, they are by and large, but you know, they can be pretty contrary as well. But we have the little boys, it just seems like there's a natural propensity for them to create havoc. It just is. And the little girls, somewhere, I don't know where it starts. Some of them, it starts younger than others. I think they just want to nurture something. It's something that develops over time. And we're part of the church in ourselves individually, but we're part of that. We're developing it, and we're making it more impactful and more capable in our generation and on our location, because we're joint members. All of us here, not just the ladies, but the men too, are part of that spiritual mother. But we're not only part of the spiritual mother. This new Jerusalem that's the mother of us all is the church. It's the bride of Christ. It's also the kingdom that Daniel prophesied about. You remember Daniel prophesying about in the days of these kings in Daniel 2 and 44. He says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." This kingdom is the church. It's the mother, the spiritual mother. It's the bride of Christ. And you say, "Well, Brother Danny, you're just throwing so much stuff out there. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around all of that. Where does one pick up and the other leave off?" Well, when Adam said Eve was the mother of all living, and when a mother in the flesh today takes makes herself available to be a mother to someone that needs a mother, when they bring a child into this world to be a mother too, I'm going to tell you, it's a lot of moving targets. There's a lot of components that come together. I believe with all of my heart that the church is the bride of Christ. I believe with all of my heart that the church is a spiritual church, and it has a visible body that includes you and I today, if we're part of the children, if we're a child of God. We're part of the spiritual church. It's the mother that nurtures and cares for the little newborn babes into the kingdom, into the family. It's the church that's the mother is the kingdom that Daniel prophesied about, the spiritual kingdom. It was set up and it will never be destroyed. It was set up when Jesus came. It's not going to be set up at some time in the future. It's here today. It was in the days of the kings that were in power when Jesus came. All right? Jesus came. He says that, when did he say that Isaiah was being fulfilled? Right then. Today. You can read that in Luke, the 4th chapter and the 18th verse. So now, I've tried to set the stage for complexity. And I want us to turn to 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. In the sixth verse, there's a lot of things we could get out of this verse, but I want us to focus in on one little thought. It says here, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. I want us to focus in on this phrase that says, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. So, I believe that Peter here was writing specifically to women in this verse. Not the church as a mother, but as he was specifically addressing women that was professing godliness, that were in the spiritual church, that was the spiritual mother. Anyway, you understand where I'm going with this. He was specifically talking to that gender when he said, this phrase, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Now he's comparing you to being a daughter of Sarah. Sarah was the mother of Isaac, which was the mother of Jacob. And Jacob was the one that had his name changed to Israel, where the Israelites come from, which became the Jews, which Jesus came to deliver the gospel message. And so it transitioned from a literal family to a spiritual family. When Jesus came, he died for my sins, but he died for those sins of the people that was come behind him, ahead of him and behind him. Those that had offered the sacrifices and rolled their sins forward, Jesus died for those sins. All right? I hope you can grasp what I'm saying here. But Sarah was a mother, an ancestral mother. So today, it's Mother's Day, and I think sometimes you can start down the road of being a literal mother, whether it's biologically or adoptive or circumstantial or whatever. You can start down the journey of being a mother and be intimidated and overwhelmed with what that all entails. So I want us to look at Sarah and some of the things that happened to her. I'd like to turn over here to Genesis, the 17th chapter. And notice in verse 15, I believe it is. And God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarah, but Sarah shall she be. Well, there was a meaning that changed here. Her name changed from being the definition being my princess to princess. Okay? And the next verse says, and I will bless her and give thee a son of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. Did that happen? It did. Her name change was part of the promise that God gave to Abraham. Okay? So this disrupted her her life. It was a promise given to her husband, and her life, her name got changed. And I don't know just exactly how old she was at this time. Maybe we could dig into that, and I didn't. I'm not prepared to give you a number here this morning. But we know this, she hadn't had any children as of yet. Whether they had been married a couple years or 50 years, I'm not real sure this morning. But she became part of the promise. And you know, when a young lady allows her affections to go out to a young man and they enter into marriage, it's a disruption to your life. There's things that changes. All of my daughter-in-laws have went through this deal of getting their name changed on their driver's license and their addresses changed and their last name got changed and they got any kind of, I don't know if they had credit cards or whatever, they had to change the names on all of that kind of stuff. My wife did the same thing. They had to get the name changed on their social security card and all this kind of stuff. It's old hat stuff. I never had to do it all. But my wife did. My daughter-in-laws have. Sarah's was part of the promise. She got a name change. It's one of those complexities that happens. In the verse 19, he says, "And God said, Sarah, thy wife," this is, he's speaking to Abraham, "Sarah, thy wife, shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant, and with his seed after him." Do you know what it means to be included in a plan, included in a promise, included in something, and yet feel like you don't have the ability to make it happen? You know, being a prospective mother can be that way. There's wishes, there's hopes, there's dreams, there's ideals, but it's out there in the future. It's not reality yet. You know how much pressure Sarah probably felt over the years? No children, no son, no Isaac. She heard, whether it was directly or indirectly, she heard what God said. Whether Abraham told her or she heard God herself, she knew that they were supposed to have a son and they were going to call his name Isaac. Verse 12 of the next chapter. Therefore, maybe reading verse 9, "And they said unto him, Where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, Behold, in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard in the tent which was behind him. And now Abraham and Sarah were old." How much time passed between the promise in the last chapter and this? I don't know, but the scripture just says they were old. "And well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying," she didn't even laugh out loud, but she laughed within herself, "After I am waxen old, shall I have pleasure? My Lord also being old also?" My husband is an old man, and I'm an old woman, and these people are out here talking silly stuff about us having a son. I wonder how many times she'd wondered, is this going to be the year that we have that promised son? And it came and went, and no son. And she felt a lot of pressure. And mothers, prospective mothers, you can feel a lot of pressure too. And so, then Sarah, verse 14 maybe, is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, Nay, but thou didst laugh. And the men arose from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abraham went with them and bring them in the way. So we find here that just another element of pressure that happened. You know, somewhere in there, Sarah felt like she was going to help things along, didn't she? She was feeling the pressure. And she done something I would hope that nobody would even entertain. She brought in someone else. And she was going to try to get a son by another woman with her husband and try to claim that son as her own. Didn't work out like she planned for it to. Didn't work out at all. It wasn't what God had in mind. And, you know, but what I want us to get a picture of here is how much stress and pressure she felt under trying to see this promise come about. And we know what happened when after she did have Isaac, and Ishmael was a pretty good sized lad and maybe almost a teenager or was a teenager. I'm not real sure on the age there, but as time went on, there was conflict, there was animosity, there was things that shouldn't have been, but it was. But you know, you're going to have to deal with things like that too. You're going to have to deal with emotional swings, and you're going to have to deal with accusations. And hopefully none of you that are mothers would ever have to deal with a situation like this. But you might deal with something that's just as powerful. You might deal with something where you feel like somebody's not treating your children right. And you feel like you need to take things in your own hand. You want to tell your husband, get this person out of my life because they're causing the promised child trouble. I've seen it happen, folks. You're going to be under pressure. You're going to have things because your mothering nature is going to want things to be better than it is, than the circumstance that's presented itself, and you're wanting things better, and you're going to put maybe some pressure on your husband to fix that. I want to tell you, being a mother is a tall calling, and it covers a lot of things. You're going to have to deal with some emotional distresses. You know, it's not just outside influences either. Let's turn to Genesis, the 20th chapter. There can even be things that happen between you and your husband. Genesis 20 and chapter 2. It says here, and Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Now, how many of you young ladies, or older either one, how many of you would appreciate that? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I would guess none of you would say, oh, that'd be all right with me, I don't care. Yeah, it would. I mean, Abraham went from being my hero to now he's looking like he's trying to save his own neck. That's what happened. You know, you're going to have to deal with sometimes your husband not doing what you think he ought to do. It's just, I'm just telling you, that's the way life is sometimes. And Sarah dealt with that too. Remember what we read in there in 1 Peter? Whose daughters ye are. If you face this without being overwhelmed and without being amazed and just completely It's a tall order. I'm not talking about something that's easy. It's a real challenge. So, I want us to think about the prospect of being a mother today. As already been said earlier in the service, it's a real need out there for there to be real mothers, someone that is dedicated to the home, dedicated to the children, dedicated to the long term, not looking for relief. Today, more than ever, we need mothers that'll be strong, mothers that'll refuse to be overwhelmed. Do you know what that means? You know what it means to be overwhelmed? You know what it means to refuse to be overwhelmed? Let's go back and read that verse in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. Because I find a real challenge here. 3 and 6 of 1 Peter, it says that last part, it says, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Do you feel like I'm doing any injustice by changing that not afraid with any amazement to a phrase that says something like refuse to be overwhelmed? Not afraid with any amazement. Not afraid like fear of the unknown. You know, that's kind of what overwhelms us, isn't it? Isn't that what kind of causes us to feel like, I can't handle this? You know, I think of the times that I'll tell y'all, it's kind of funny, but it was real serious too. I remember one time as a young boy, my mother was very nurturing and very caring for me. I want y'all to know that. And there's one time that I got my toe in the lawnmower, and she was very, very compassionate about getting my shoe off and all of that, and very considerate, and it turned out it just barely grazed. I think it broke my toe, but it didn't really cut it up. And I was very glad my mother was at home, and I didn't have to wait for her to get home from work, because I was in a lot of distress at that time. And another time, I stuck a pocket knife in my hand, and I'd pulled it out, and I was bleeding really bad. And my mother-in-law, not my mother-in-law, my mother came in there. I was really young. I don't know, probably 10, 12 years old. Might have been younger than 10, but anyway. She came in there, and she kind of overreacted a little bit. She was kind of distressed that I was bleeding so much, and I fainted on her, and I fell on the floor. And then she really got excited. But, you know, it was her care. You're going to face those things. There's going to be, if it's not one thing, it's going to be something else. And you've got to refuse to be overwhelmed. It's a tall order. It's a tall order for you to be a mother. And I want you to face it with courage. It's needed. You want a man to be strong. You want him to be your protector. You want him to be a real father. You want him to have direction. You want him to have focus. You want him to be undeterred from accomplishing what he needs to accomplish as the leader in the home. You don't want him to waver or bend when it comes to spiritual integrity and moral integrity and all of that. I'm going to tell you, we need mothers that refuse to be overwhelmed, that refuse to allow themselves to succumb to this fear of amazement. This Peter said, "You're Sarah's daughter. If you can rise above those things," she did. Sarah rose above those things. I don't know how she did. I don't know how she rose above being passed off as her husband's sister. I don't know how she rose above the mistakes of allowing Hagar to have a child. I don't, that was just, it was a bad deal. You're going to face some very distressing things. But I want you to know that just as Sarah came through, and Peter looked back at Sarah, many, many generations, I don't know how many hundreds of years, but he looked back at Sarah, and he was telling the women of his age, of his time, you'll be a daughter of Sarah if you'll do what? As long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. So my challenge to the women today, whether they're here or somewhere out there, is you will do well. And you'll be a daughter of Sarah if you are not afraid with any amazement. Don't allow yourself to become, to succumb to being overwhelmed. You know what happens when you succumb to being overwhelmed? You give up. You're not a helpmeet any longer. You're a liability. It's a tall charge. A woman would have said that different. But I'm not a woman, I'm a man. It's a tall charge. Don't allow yourself to be overwhelmed. Don't succumb to the point that you can't be an asset in the home, that your husband can't safely trust in you. It's a tall charge. To raise children, to guide a home, it takes a strong person. I believe God can help us, each one. God will give you the abilities to exercise your nurturing and your loving and your compassionate disposition. It's what makes children turn to mother. I wanted my oldest son, I wanted him to love me so bad when I was a new father. And I found out when he was, I don't remember, he was maybe a few weeks, of maybe a month or so old, and she wanted to go to town by herself, and my wife, bless her heart, left. She went out the door, and he started crying, and I'd done everything that I thought she would do to him. I just wasn't mama. And he cried until she come back in the door. And as soon as she, oh, you poor little thing, and picked him up, he was happy. And I felt like a toadstool. But things changed. You know, you're going to be able to be the mother. I know you are. I've got 100% confidence that you'll build those kind of relationships with children. And, you know, not only does the mothers, the literal mothers, but we as a church, we cannot be overwhelmed. We cannot allow ourselves to succumb to the pressures, the disappointments, the rejection. We can't allow ourselves to succumb to that. Because you know what that means? It means we give up. We just can't give up. We can't do that. We'll be like a daughter of Sarah if we are not afraid with any amazement. You pray for me. I want to be part of the spiritual mother. And I want you, ladies, to be real mothers in our homes around about us. You pray for me.